Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Welcome back to the Sports Media Watch podcast. I'm John Lewis, and in a moment, Armand Brody and I will be joined by veteran ESPN producer Paul Irvin, who works on the network's NBA and WNBA coverage. This is a conversation Armand, Paul, and I had a couple of weeks ago, and it touches on a lot of the questions that you as a viewer may have about what we see on our screens every day when we watch TV sports. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. It's another special edition of the SMW podcast. All right. Well, we are very happy on the podcast this week to be joined by Paul Irvin, a producer for the NBA on ESPN, who's been in that role since 2021. Paul is somebody who we will talk to a little bit about some of the behind-the-scenes aspects of NBA production. The NBA heading into some interesting new times after this offseason is complete. Maybe we'll touch a little bit on that, too. But Paul, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Not a problem, fellas. Anytime. Looking forward to the conversation.
All right. So why don't we start out just with, you know, obviously the internet can be sometimes an unfriendly place for discussion about, you know, sports on television, basketball on television, and the NBA on ESPN. Just as somebody from the outside looking in who has had his fair share of critiques over the years, what is it that people on the critic side and on the viewer side miss about what you are doing as the one who is in the arena?
The short answer is everything. I mean, I'm just be honest with you. It's amazing some of the comments you get. I'm including my closest friends and family who text me something random about, hey, why are you all doing this? Or why did you do this? And I'm like, I have nothing to do with that. And that's not how production works. So that's the short answer. But I can give you an example from something I saw on an event, a WNBA game last night. Was not one of our productions, but someone had thrown something onto the basketball court. The director, or it was shown on television, full stop. I saw a comment on the internet someone made, and they said, the cameraman's going to get fired for that shot. I was thinking, the cameraman takes every shot. The director is actually who you mean if someone were to get fired. So I'm just showing you the simple stuff of how production works. If why did you not show a replay there? Or why did I show a replay? Or, you know, the simple things like that, it's I'll give you a super long answer. But the short part is, honestly, I think most things. I'm as big as a basketball fan, sports fan in general, as you could find, right? Always been that way. I've been in this business since 2001. When I got out of college, it's the only job I've known, sports television production. There was so much I didn't know before I got in the business, despite watching every sport I could watch for the first 25 years of my life. It's just very different when you're sitting in a chair on the production side. I can't even watch games the same anymore. I mean, it's night and day from what you think to what actually occurs on the satellite truck when we're producing a game.
Explain to people, Paul, what a producer actually does. And you can be as detailed as you want, because I don't think people really know what you do. They know that you're at the game, usually, unless you're producing it from a studio. But I don't know if people really have a sense of what your job is before broadcast and during the broadcast itself.
Sure. Well, first of all, let's start with the biggest misconception. We are on a satellite truck that's either in tunnel or outside of the arena basically an athlete, okay? People think I'm in the arena. You can't produce a game from there, right? We're on a satellite truck, production crew, anywhere from, you know, let's say 10 to 20 people, depending on the event, just maybe on one truck. So my job as a producer, and I'll unpack it. I'll start with the short answer, which is I am responsible for everything you hear, every replay you see, any graphic you see, right? It's all going to fall under my jurisdiction. And my director is responsible for the aesthetics, right? The example I gave earlier about showing a shot when somebody throws something on the court. I'm a producer. I don't say take camera six, take the shot. The director makes that decision. So as a producer, if I'm producing a game, obviously it's a reaction business, right? Everything changes once the ball is tipped, the ball is kicked off, what have you. But when we go into a game, for instance, I have a game coming up on Sunday, right? I'm having a production meeting for my first production meeting of the week for tomorrow to talk about the ideas we want to put on the air, right? These are the ideas we want to talk about. These are the edits we want to come up with, right? I'm producing a game. If I'm doing a Caitlin Clark game, I want to have some big Caitlin Clark moments. So when you guys are watching TV and she hits a deep three and you'll say, oh, she hit a deep three from that same spot last week, I have that video already, right? If I get a whistle, I can get that in. So we're preparing for every, within anything that makes sense, every moment that could possibly happen that we could be controlled and be prepared for, we prepare for it, right? That means graphically, I need to prepare for somebody's going to get 60 points in this game and break the WNBA or the NBA record for scoring, just giving you a bland example, right? I need to be prepared for that. My job is to make sure everybody is on the same page as far as storylines going into the game. That's my first job, right? What are the big storylines? And if you're on a sport, you should know those, right? So we have that production meeting, get on the same page about the graphics we might want to insert into the game, and just the general conversation we want to have when we're in position to dictate the conversation if the game flow allows us to, right? The game starts. Once we get in the chair, my job is to traffic everything you see. Anytime you see a replay on any basketball, any sporting event, the producer's calling that replay. It's not just, so I'm responsible for when we replay, how long that replay is, what camera angle replay I'm going to, and when we do it, right? That's all producer jurisdiction, right? So if you're watching a game and you see one angle of a dunk and you wish you saw two and maybe you thought it might be better from another angle, now you can curse me out. That does fall under my jurisdiction, and you can say, what is the producer doing, right? So once the game starts, that's one of the main things we're doing, right? The biggest thing you have to do, just let me back up a second, the biggest thing you have to do as a producer is to listen. You have to listen to your announcers, right? Everybody is trying to talk to you as a producer. I have to filter all of that into what's most important, which is the announcers, and then it's my director. I have an associate director usually sitting right next to me as well. I have graphics in the back who's responsible for every graphic you see. Right. So getting everybody on the same page with that, making sure we're listening. So you're following the game flow and you're following what the announcers say. And my job is to make sure we're on top of it. When the announcers are talking about something that I know we've prepared for in the meeting I mentioned earlier, I need to go back to my graphics guy and say, hey, where's that Sue Bird graphic? During that Sue Bird conversation we talked about this morning. Hey, we're talking about Alicia Gray and Asia Wilson's relationship. Hey, give me those pictures from college. Give me the pictures from when they went to Carowinds. This actually happened in a game we did last week, right? So you go in preparing for every storyline you can have, and then just following the game and reacting, right? I have to decide, is this a good time to put in this graphic? Is this a good time to put in this replay? Promos, right? Sales elements. It's just a big, it's a big puzzle that we have to put together. And always find, honestly, I feel like the more people in television talk about it, I feel like the more confusing it can get for the person who's not in it. I tell people that all the time. Like, I say, just stick to knowing I'm responsible for replays and graphics and a bunch of other stuff that you really don't even want to know about. It's just a lot.
How do you deal with those unexpected things that happen during a game? What comes to mind to me is game 7 of the finals, Tyrese Halliburton tears his Achilles. No one really would have thought that could happen. and it completely changes the tenor of the game. Like, how do you handle those types of events?
Like I mentioned, you're just reacting at that point. Producers usually say, well, anybody in television will tell you, it will find you, right? And that means that moment, that game, what have you. You can never be prepared for something of that magnitude, right? I think going forward, people will be better prepared because you saw Dame Lillard, you saw Tatum, you saw Haliburton. Now, it's almost a must to what I was saying earlier about preparation, just to go back a second, that we're prepared going forward, that we have these major Achilles injuries. Pretty much for every NBA game, have the video ready. If there's a comparison you can draw to, same spot, similar, you need to just have those ready. So this question actually led me back to that one. But in the moment when it happens, you just have to be on your toes, right? It's at that point, it's just the collective, right? It's the research department immediately trying to figure out whatever it is that's going on. The first thing you'll do in this specific instance, I'm on talkback, which is how the producer and the announcers speak to each other. So it doesn't go over air, right? So I'm telling my reporter, get on that, get me something ASAP. So my sideline reporter, right? If you're watching the game and it's, pick one, Cassidy Huppert, right? If you're watching the game, I'm like, Cassidy, I need you to find out ASAP. Anything you can get me to let me know status. And they'll follow the player in the tunnel, right? Talk to the, try to get anything from the team PR in any type of serious situation like that. Because that's the boots on the ground, so to speak, right? You're play-by-player, you're an analyst. They can't leave the table. So they're waiting for me to tell them information that I'm trying to get from my sideline. So at that point, again, man, it's just all hands on deck. In situations like that, even if you're not prepared for it from a graphic standpoint or a video standpoint, we're all, whatever sport you're doing, you're a fan, right? So I could immediately go to, just honestly talking as a sports fan, I was having conversations about Achilles for Dame specifically and Haliburton before it happened, right? So I'm just saying, at least in my head as a producer, I can mention that. I can get somebody, hey, give me that video. Hey, give me the graphic. What was that date? And we can start trying to, tie some things together. But it's a mad rush. But the main thing as a producer is you have to stay cool. Everybody's looking. It's all eyes on me as a producer. So what are we going to do in this situation? Like the question you just asked me, that's what everybody's asking in real time. It's like you feel, all the eyes, they're right here. From this direction, everybody behind me. And everybody I can't see who's trying to ask me through the headset, what are we doing?
I would love to know, when you're in those kinds of situations, how do you know when, to go back to Haliburton, how do you know when to stay on a shot? I'm assuming there has to be some communication with your director as well. Because, okay, sure, there could be a graphic or some video to support it, but one of the most important shots was the shot of Halliburton's father, showing the sadness, the overwhelming emotion at his son there. So how do you make that decision between this is when we go to some other element and this is when we want to stay live and stay on some live shots, tight shots versus right, wide shots? How do you make that decision?
Well, obviously you're making a judgment call. Let's start there, right? This is one of the, I would guess, few businesses in the world where pretty much all the feedback, most of the feedback you're going to get is going to be subjective. I mean, you're talking like not well over 90%. And I'm saying if it was the president or CEO of the company, right, there's not many rights and wrongs to what we do. There are some no-nos and things like that. So you're making a judgment call. Whatever's live, you can never get it back, right? So Halliburton's father, we have a camera dedicated to him. And if we don't, as soon as anything happens with Haliburton, we have a camera whose job, shoot him now, right? So it could be a big three. We got a camera ready to go to Halliburton's dad, right? It's not just some injury, but we're on Halliburton dad watch, right? So we're recording that, right? If Haliburton goes down and he's banging on the ground, no, 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 and, right, you can kind of see what it is. you stay on that as long as you can. You want to be respectful, and we have meetings about these things all the time. You want to be respectful when it's clear that somebody's really hurt. You don't want to be zooming all in. Just a very personal moment, right? So obviously this was not a gruesome injury from, you know, just from a visual standpoint. Like, we've seen some people, you know, really gruesome that you don't even want to replay, right? We can replay this forever. And it's just, you know, you might say, wait, what happened, right? If you don't know about Achilles, you're like, wait, he's out for the year off that? So whatever you get live, you can never get it back. So if you have a good shot live and good reactions, you stay there. Now, in a situation like that, and I usually like to stay out of there, stay out of their business, but me and a director are probably deciding at some point together, hey, can I get off this shot? Because even if it's to get, you know, fan reaction live, at some point you want to cut around and see that emotion, right? You want to get fans at home, like, these are the people here feeling just like you. So everything's a judgment call, right? But just know at that point, everything's on tape. So if you miss something, right, somebody tells me in my tape room, hey, I got a good shot of Halliburton's dad reacting right here. I look, yes, let's roll that. Hey, I got a good shot of, I got a little kid crying with a Halliburton jersey on. Yes, give me that, right? So you're just trying to give fans at home, viewers, a sense of place, a sense of the arena, a sense of what's actually happening. But if you have something good live, the initial thing that this is about, you need to try to stay there, right? There's no rush to the replay in a situation like that. What are you rushing to? This is clearly going to take a second.
You know, the point you brought up just now about sensitivity, well, there's two aspects of it. One is that which is not gruesome, but still difficult. As you mentioned, an Achilles tear is not Gordon Hayward breaking his leg, right? It's not gruesome visually, but, you know, his raw emotion, there's a lot of people on social media who feel like that's a bit voyeuristic, it's too much. And then there's the other side of it that says this is, even though it's live sports, it is journalism, and you're supposed to be telling the story of what's going on. Where do you kind of ride that fine line with that kind of thing?
That's a really tough line, and that's something else that there are constant conversations about, you know, us as a group. A real example of that is Juju Watkins' injury. Right? I mean, on the scale of ACLs, I wouldn't call it gruesome, right? I wouldn't call it gruesome, especially because of the camera. And it was just kind of, you know, she got caught up, so you couldn't really see what was happening. But there are, you know, there's some people who thought, you know, cameras were a little too close, and you can hear the screams of the raw emotion. Like, that was a real conversation. I got to say, from a production standpoint, from my producer lens, I had no problem with the replays or anything that was shown. But I'm just saying, I guess I'll say that to say this. You're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. That's the reality of it. But we definitely, I produced college football for some years. I produced a bunch of sports. I've done a college football game where somebody's gotten seriously injured, and I haven't shown a single replay. So we are very sensitive to these things. And that's where the communication starts. Everybody, you know, your guys in tape, who I don't want to assume everybody knows, who are the guys who are actually recording the plays, responsible for rolling the replays, they're telling you, hey, I got a look, but you don't want to show this. Or I got a good look, not too bad, right? So our main job, number one objective, is to document the game. Whatever the event is, that's our main job, is to document it. So even on something that could be questionable on a gruesome level to some, you try to show it at least once, but preferably from a high angle so you're not seeing anything tight. That's the preference. So that's kind of your baseline. And again, you're making judgment calls at that point, right? But if you, it's tough, because I'll be honest, I could think a lot's gruesome that some people don't. Like, I don't like watching, I don't like watching stuff like that. But again, I am tasked with making a decision in that moment, right? But I can't just be like, well, I think it's gruesome, and that's it. So in those situations, you know, might say, what you think about that? You think we good? All right. So it's a similar, it's a lot of discussions. But you have to be sensitive, right? We're humans, right? And I do think about, what, you know, his mom's there, right? Like, if somebody, I can tell you this for sure. If somebody is, you know, if we see somebody's knocked out cold, somebody's, you know, maybe having a seizure on the field, and these are real things we've all seen. No, sometimes we see that, we are pulling cameras out, we're cutting off of it. You know, we might have the announcer say, hey, we're not going to show you, but we have a medical situation on the field, right? So a lot of situations, you might see a camera go in, we didn't know what was going on, right? The cameras are eyes and ears. So we might zoom into something and say, oh, let's get out of here. We didn't realize it was like that. So understand that happens as well. But you're definitely trying to be sensitive about the situation. But at the end of the day, again, you're making the judgment call. But that's what your job is.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Shifting gears a little bit. Talk about Caitlin Clark. You mentioned her a little bit ago. You're getting ready to actually produce an Indiana Fever game as we tape this. What's it like when you're producing a Caitlin Clark game versus a non-Caitlin Clark game? Put that producer hat on for us and sort of walk us through how the process or how your thinking, how your strategies maybe shift or change a little bit because of who she is. If at all.
Right. Well, I was going to say it sounds cliche, but as a producer, it doesn't change my focus and how I prep, but I'm aware that it's a quote unquote bigger game. There will probably be more viewers, including people who manage me, who'll be watching in real time. They watch all the games. They'll be watching that one in real time. Right. You're aware of these things. And like any, you know, we're not athletes, but I get juiced for big games, right? When I have a big game I'm producing, you know, like I've produced, you know, NBA playoff games the last several years. You know, I do a 3-point contest for WNBA. I get juiced for you get juiced for the big events. I did a game 5 last year, Minnesota Lynx and Connecticut, right? To get to the finals. You get jacked for those games. So of course you get juiced for big games, but again, as far as the prep, and you can't go into it different, right? My most important show when I used to produce studio is my next show. My most important game is my next game. I can't overlook Liberty and Wings, which was a game, was on my schedule 2 nights ago because I have Seattle and the Caitlin Clark game coming up. Didn't work that way. Because if I mess up something on the previous game, I can't tell my boss, well, I got Caitlin Clark coming up. Why wouldn't hear that? So it sounds cliche. It truly doesn't work that way. Now, you're juiced for a bigger game. There's a good chance I'll have more resources given to me because it's looked at as a bigger game, bigger ratings for the company, which makes all the sense in the world. I think those little things, might be changes, right? You might have an extra camera here. If you want to make sure you're on Caitlin. And you get juiced, but, as far as the prep and stuff, I just go into it the same. Maybe some more elements because she's produced more moments, right? But she's dictated that.
Now, I got to ask this question too, and tread carefully if you need to. The conversation around Caitlin.
Sure.
Because you're actually producing her games, you're having the conversations around how to document what she's doing.
Sure.
What's your response to the outsiders who aren't in those meetings that you're leading, who aren't putting the production elements together in real time to document what she's doing? What's your response to all of those outside noises from commentators on television who don't have the knowledge you have because you're actually there on site producing her games? How does that grab you?
Sure. Well, I mean, it's annoying to a point, but again, I'm a nameless, for the most part, faceless producer to the world. They don't, right? They know the announcers who are speaking. So it's got to be more annoying for them. You know, when I'm scrolling Twitter and I see comments, it's as I said before, I'm just like, you have no clue. So it's just annoying from that aspect. And you want to chime in, but there's no win for me there. So I just like look at a comment and just laugh. And you know, you just have to move on. But I promise you, I promise people who have any comments, I don't care who wins. We don't care who wins. Nobody's playing favorites for any athlete. Insert any athlete you want. There's no favorites, right? I just want a good game as a producer, good game for ratings. Everybody goes home happy, right? There is no bias. Anyone who feels it's a bias from from any TV network, it's just that person or team is putting up more moments and their play in said game is probably dictating the coverage go that way. Honestly, it's as simple as that, right? If you, for 15 years, if you watched the world thought everybody loved the Patriots, it was probably the opposite, to be honest with you. As somebody who actually lived in Boston during that reign, but you had to talk about them all the time because they were winning and had Tom Brady, right? But to a lot of other people, that came off as favoritism, right? And slanted from the coverage. People used to say the same thing about Michael Jordan and the Bulls. It's like, no, they're just kind of winning all the time, and he's the best player, so we're going to talk about him. Like, it's just that. Sometimes it's just that simple. But just understand from a preparation and a production standpoint, going into those games, it's not a, we got to talk about Caitlin Clark for 32 minutes. There's nothing like that. You're reacting to the game and the flow of the game. Obviously, she's a huge talking point, right? And you're going to have some natural conversations about her, whether she's playing good or bad, because either one is a story. If she's playing great, of course. If she's playing bad, that might be an even bigger story. So, newsflash, the stars in every sports league ever drive the conversations. That's as simple as you can make it. I should have just started with that, actually, but I didn't.
Well, so why don't we talk a little bit more about that in conjunction with the game you're doing on Sunday, which is the Fever at the Storm, am I correct? Indiana and Seattle? Correct. So Caitlin, right now, she's hurt. I don't imagine she's going to be back, but I don't think she's been ruled out either. So how do you work, how do you prepare for that broadcast coming up on Sunday with the uncertainty regarding whether she'll play?
I go in hoping she'll play. Again, no favoritism, just won a great game. Why would you not want the stars to play in the games? So hoping, obviously, that is a huge conversation that we have. Great. That's actually a really good question. So you're preparing for both, right? Like, I'm preparing as if she'll play. This is not any information I have. I know nothing. But from a producer standpoint, it's easier for me to prepare for her to play if she doesn't play. Just taking out all her elements, right? It's literally just, hey, the Caitlin Clark elements are dead, guys. So-and-so starting, right? And we've had her, a good bit. So, video of her and graphic. We're in a good place on Caitlin Clark, right? We're not unprepared for anything she might do. And frankly, we just had Indiana on our air a couple nights ago. I didn't do the game, but we just had them on our air. So we've been doing the last couple games without Caitlin Clark. So we're prepared for it. Each situation. Either way it goes, you just hope she plays. And obviously, your conversation is totally different. If she doesn't, right, you're open, which is the first 1 to 3 minutes everyone sees. When you first come on and you see the announcers get on camera and set up the game, that's called the open. Your open will be different, the content to set up the game. But we've had games with both, so it kind of is what it is. But boy, I sure hope she plays, I'm being honest. Well, it's just, again, get juice for it. Like, the crowd's going to be way more juice, right? It's a road game, hostile road environment. Like, yeah, you want those moments. I want to have a game where go 50, right? And she could do it. So, selfishly, I want it. Yeah, play, please.
You've been able to see firsthand the changes in the WNBA over these past few years. Is it night and day? Doing, and I don't just mean Fever games, any WNBA games compared to when you started?
Yes. It is night and day from 3 seasons ago. The momentum was slowly building, and then it just hit like the roof caved in. You're just watching ratings grow exponentially. You're going to these arenas and fandom is crazy, right? So many arenas are going from smaller venues to the NBA arenas because of ticket sales. And this is all over the league. This is not just a fever thing here. This happens all over the league. It is night and day. It's great. I mean, I think the boom is great, and it's only going to get better. Juju's going to be hitting the league in a couple of years. Juju Watkins, and she's back as she was, she is going to be, I would say, an immediate big hit. So the arrow will definitely point up for sure. But it is certainly, I would say, it's night and day like nothing I've ever seen from a sport, like over a basically a 2 or 3 year span. I've never seen such a jump, and it's crazy. Like, I have friends who text me about the W now because they know I do it, but they text me because they're watching. That would have never happened in any years in the past, besides the last couple or so, for sure.
Let me get an NBA question in there. Hubie Brown just retired early this year, and I know you have a lot of respect for Hubie Brown as a television analyst. Can you share a favorite Hubie story? I know you've produced him on occasion as well. Can you share a Hubie story with us?
Hubie is... I have the utmost respect for Hubie Brown. Before I ever got into... I don't know before I got into television, but way I've been telling people Hubie Brown is the best analyst in all of sports long before I met Hubie Brown. Like, I'm on record with this. Like, I've had to pull up emails to people from the early 2000s and say, no, here it is right here. I had to tell Hubie this. So, huge fan. Huge fan of his as a basketball coach. Brilliant mind, but I used to just turn on the game and hear Hubie and be like, oh, this is going to be good. So, huge fan. Huge, huge fan. Pleasure to work with. So happy I got to produce him. And actually have here. I got a story for you.
Lay it on me.
It's not even a great story. It's kind of personal, actually. But Hubie, I'm such a fan, right? So we talk anytime we have a game, and we're just talking, right? So obviously Hubie's not texting. He's not doing that. So it's not happening. So it's a phone conversation. So old school. But I'm talking to Hubie, bro. Who cares? Like, we could talk forever. So he would call. And we get to talking about the game, and obviously, he's weaving in stories just like the whole time. And he's getting the points, and Jerry, oh, Kareem, right? He's just Jerry West and Kareem and Abdul-Jabbar, like, it's nothing. But these are his guys. Like, him and Jerry West apparently were really super duper close friends. So he's told me a lot of stories. But my point in saying that is, I have one of our conversations that I just started recording. I still have it on my phone, so I just want to keep this. And he's being himself. He's giving me some raw, uncut stuff on basketball. Like, he still has that coach in him, and even at his age, and still is sharp. But he has that in him where he'll get peed about some stuff on the basketball court. Like, and it's like you feel like he's right back in his prime. So. Those are my memories with him, and stuff like that, and going out to dinner the night before the game, the couple of times I got to do that with him. That's where you get the good stuff. We had a drink together. He told me he doesn't drink. He's only when he goes out to dinner with the production crew, he'll have one. And he took like one sip of it. But it was great. Like, I'll never forget it. But Hubie's great. But that's when he's his best, when you get to just talk basketball with Hubie Brown. Like, what's... There's nothing better than that. It's great.
I find the Hubie tribute this year, I think a lot of people really appreciated. I don't know if you did that game or were associated with it, but I'm sure you probably watched it.
Our close colleague produced it, yep.
So, you know, what is it about an announcer like Hubie Brown, since you are a fan of his, that just connects so much with the viewer over such a length of time? Because we know that in sports broadcasting, people tend to prioritize personality, you know, obviously things like what Tony Romo does, predicting plays. But what was it about Hubie Brown that resonated so well?
First of all, he knows his stuff. He's brilliant, brilliant basketball mind. Right. So, and I don't know this part because when he first got into it, I wasn't watching at that point. But you know, his coaching resume has always been good. So he, you know, besides knowing his stuff, he comes in with the, you know, with the resume of a, you know, and back then it wasn't like, I mean, now we have a million analysts, right? But how many were there then? Like, people act like you could have been the greatest thing ever now, and they don't even care about your resume. But I think when Hubie got on, it's like, Hubie Brown is about to be talking about basketball? I'm only assuming that. But I can tell you from now, when I got to be a producer and just watching what I understood TV, what makes him great is, again, he knows what he's talking about. Start there. He has impeccable timing. He knows when to get in, when to get out, so the play-by-play can get back to their point, right? He's he educates, but he also entertains, but he entertains without trying to, and that's probably why it hits, right? Somebody's coming down, one of the things he loves to say, somebody's coming down, and, you know, let's say some players get tangled up or they're fouling, you, whoa, hey, right? And you're like, that's Hubie if he was on the sideline coaching, this is what he'd be saying, right? But he does it every time. Like, you just go pull up a tape. And if it's something like, hey, whoa. All right, see, here's what you got going on here. And then he's going to get right into his breakdown mode. See, now what you got to do is here. So he's giving you that part of it, too, because people at home are like, whoa. You know, you're having that same emotion, right? Now you're getting back to the regular game. He breaks it down. Like I said, a brilliant basketball mind, but he explains it so simply. Whatever he's talking about, he explains it so simply. So it's his timing and it connects. He knows how to explain it to somebody who really knows the game like him or a novice, a casual viewer, which we get a lot of those. He makes you understand the game. And that's it. He preps like crazy, but he just knows the game. And, you know, the television thing, timing is something some people never get. When to speak, I'm talking from an analyst, right? Because your play-by-play has to call the game. You're reacting to plays, but you're reacting, they got to set you up. You're not just reacting to plays. They have to set you up. So it's even stuff like, if there's some type of big shot, you as an analyst, don't scream. Now you're stepping on their call. These calls are what play-by-plays live for. They make careers off these calls. And I've seen in other sports, just through the years, recently I saw, I cannot remember what it was. I mean, I wouldn't call it out either way, but it was a huge moment. Play-by-plays making the call, whatever it was. But it was like a big moment. And the analyst goes, oh, and he's screaming because of his reaction to the play. And I'm just like, he was a fairly newer. And I'm just like, man, he just crushed that call that was a moment. Like, that's top of the resume reel for the play-by-play. So, not to get off on a tangent, but timing you got to know that, right? And you got to be disciplined enough to, all right, his call is going to be 10 seconds and I need to hop in, right? And if it's just regular game flow, you need to be understanding the game and watching. Okay, bucket, I could hop in, but they're coming right back for a fast break. I won't say nothing here. Or, okay, foul, okay. I know I got about 8 seconds here to say what I got to say. He got to get back in. I see sub coming. He's going to want to talk about those sub. Hubie just picked up. I mean, it was clear that he just picked up on all that stuff early. Now, I only started working with Hubie 4 years ago, right? Tail end of his career, obviously. But all this same stuff I'm talking about, working with him is just knows TV. Like, he just knows television. He's speaking to me and he's 90 years old in television terms still. Right. So he just got it. I just think he's the best. Like, yeah, man, talk about him forever if you want.
What are these qualities about Hubie right? That you believe that as a producer, you can bring out of talent. Like, is it possible for a producer to bring those qualities out of talent?
Yes. So, say yes too quick. Yes and no. So I did, and this is also a true story. So Hubie Brown did a Sports Illustrated podcast. At this point, it might be 20 years ago. What is this, 2025? Maybe like 20 years ago. But the podcast was about Hubie the broadcaster. It had nothing to do with basketball. And it was like an hour, right? Again, I was a huge Hubie fan, so I was all over this. Watched it, saw it, great. I need to find it again. And once I became a producer, I used to tell every analyst I had, especially younger ones, no matter what sport they did, studio, if they did studio shows or games, I say, watch this. And I gave them the exact time code that they should start it. And I said, this is a broadcasting clinic. Again, this whole thing was just Hubie and the guy from SI talking about Hubie the broadcaster. He asked him how he prepped. What does he look for? He asked Hubie about the timing. How does he know when to get in? Everything. So my point is, I sent that to a bunch of people just over the years, like numerous. Some probably didn't watch it. Those that did would always come back and say, hey, that really helped me. That was great. So I don't want to just give a quick yes that we can help, but that is our job. Like, I mean, I've had a million, younger people who are, younger announcers, whether it's play-by-play or an analyst. And, I've been tasked with helping them come along a little bit. So that certainly happens. If you got everybody, just think about it, everybody starts somewhere, right? Nobody's just jumping in great. So I guess the answer is yes. The answer is yes, because, they got to get there somewhere. And you don't know what you don't know. Obviously, they have to do the work. And a lot of that goes into prep. Right. We watch game film like athletes. I have to watch my games back. They watch the games back to see spots where, they want to work on or just see how they did. It's no different for us. That's part of the job, actually, to watch your stuff back.
When you watch that game film, Paul, how do you know when you've done a good job?
That's tough to ask. I mean, you're going to be hard on yourself, right? But so if I'm watching the game back, I'm obviously taking notes on it, right? So if my notes are short, I'm like, I ain't gonna tell you, okay, it's bad. Sweet. This wasn't as bad as I thought. I feel like in the moment, I always think, you always want some plays back, so to speak, right? Like just in that moment. That's the thing about what we do. That's it. That is gone. That it ain't no going back. 2 seconds is like an eternity. It's too late. Like, the ball's inbounded already. You can't replay it. So you missed it. You was thinking too much. It's a wrap. So the short answer is when my notes are short. But, and I watch all games differently, right? If there's certain games where I know there's a certain spot I wanted to look at that I felt a certain way about in the moment, I'll go right to it. Certain times I'll say, hey, let me watch this second half. Or let me watch this first half. Because, again, it's usually another game. And if I can't get so into it, then now it's inside of my head. So I can pick and choose certain spots. Because as a producer, I know the part that I really want to get to when I watch it, right? But I'm watching it for myself, and I'm watching it for my crew. I have to give my associate producer feedback on graphics where I thought he was great, where I thought he or she could have been better, where I thought we as a group might have missed something, right? So it's also not watching for me, and I have to give my announcers feedback as well. So I talked about them where I thought they were good and where they may have been better. So, it's a lot, but if I'm watching it for me, as if my notes are shorter, I'm always going to keep them more condensed if I'm providing feedback for others. Cause I just try to, even if someone had 5 things I want them to look at, I'd send 2 and just try to keep it more focused, 1 or 2.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the basics of kind of this job. Obviously, it's collaborative. How do you go about knowing, when to delegate, for example, when to just let other people take the reins Is there any temptation sometimes to kind of jump in when you maybe don't need to?
I like to delegate within reason. I am not a micromanager, and I don't like to be micromanaged. So for me, everybody's going to start with the assumption you know how to do your job because you're hired to do it. So I like to assume I don't have to be as hands-on with certain things. If proven otherwise, I have no problem hopping in saying I got it, and I will take the lead on something. That is not an issue for me, because at the end of the day, when something goes wrong in the game, it's who's producing. That's what we all do. I mean, who's people? Our managers, people at home, fellow producers. If something big were to happen, everybody looks at the schedule. Ooh, who's producing that game? That's the first thing you look for. Like, we've all done it, right? Even if it's not your sport, I've done it. I've been watching a college basketball or football game on our air, and I've seen something, just a tough moment, like not even something bad, but like a bad injury, and I'm like, oh man, who's doing that game? You know, it's just what we do. So when something goes wrong, it's coming to me. So I need to try to make sure as much as I can that everything is correct. But I do try to delegate maybe more than some others. And I don't know if delegate's the right word, because it's truly just letting people do their job that they're supposed to do. It's not like, I feel like delegating is like, help me do my job. Like, no, it's just, this is your job. Do it. I am not going to do a third of it or half of it. You should do 100% of it. On bigger projects, maybe, but in general, I like to, you know, just keep me updated on your progress. But I like to let everybody do what they're tasked to do.
So how do I want to ask this question? When I'm watching a game produced by Paul Irvin, what is it about that game that lets me know it's a Paul Irvin game? What features, elements are going to exist from a Paul Irvin production versus a broadcast that's being produced by somebody else?
Wow. I mean, I don't have a trademark. Let me see. Well, you know what's funny? One, you listen to the rollout, depending on when we go off air, depending on who's calling the game, they'll say my name. Other than that, yeah, I don't know. But you know what? I've actually had a camera guy say he feels like I'll go to the handhelds, I'll use some of the other cameras for replays, and he said that he likes that maybe more than some others do. Maybe the camera angles, but for the most part, I mean, we're all tasked with this. We all have the same toolbox, right? If you're talking about ESPN, NBA, or WNBA, we had the same toolbox. Everybody has different thoughts and, you know, slightly different ways we execute things, but I don't know. You have me thinking about it. I'm going to ask one of my directors who works with me a lot. I feel like I need to ask that. That's, again, something where you're so in it. I don't know. And I'm not too clear on what other producers do. Like, you know, I'm watching the game, but I don't usually know who's producing, again, unless something, like I said, crazy happens and I just decide to look it up. I don't know. I try. Just watch other games. I try not to watch it as a producer. But yeah, I don't know. I think I react the same, but maybe those handheld cameras, which are the ones right under the basket, which I do like. So maybe I think I use those a little bit more. But I also feel like saying the handheld cameras under the basket might be more confusing, which is what I was saying before. So I don't know if that's confusing or not.
How much wiggle room do you have to have a signature style?
I'm honestly trying to think within the reins of what we do. Like, you know, on a broadcast, there's not going to be much spot, you know. Like, there's probably some signature edit or capper I can come up with. But the reality is, anytime any of us have good elements, we're a team, so we all going to use it. So there would be nothing. There wouldn't be too much, too many tangible things that you would know. Now, if you ask Now, I know this for sure because we always talk about it. Now, if you were to ask the crew behind the scenes the differences between a Brody show and a Paul show, they'd tell you 15 things. These are things they tell me all the time. Oh, yeah, we knew you were coming in, so XYZ. Or are you different from him because XYZ, right? But it's not stuff that I would think would show on air because, again, there's only so much any of us could do based on time, commercial breaks, sales elements. And again, we all have the same toolbox. But I think for sure the prep, the communication during games, all things like that is for sure. I think we're all very different in that regard. Like night and day, probably. And that could be, it's not a good or bad. It's just, I think that's where more of your who you are as a person is going to come out, right? Because now you're just, the people part of it.
How constrained are you by some of the modern, issues in sports TV, commercial time, sponsorship time? Like, how constrained are you by those things?
Well, I don't want to say constrained by sponsors because we like the money. So we don't take those. But that's actually a great question because hopefully this doesn't get confusing. But take a WNBA game, for example, right? We have 6 guaranteed breaks in the game, right? And breaks are commercial breaks, right? There's a media timeout in the first quarter. There's 2 media timeouts in the second quarter, 1 in the third, 2 in the fourth. All right? So that's it. So sales elements, which again, we like sales. Let's say we have 3 sales elements we need to get to. The best time to do those is out of a break. So you can be clean and you can have that time, right? So that's 3 breaks right there gone where I can't do something else maybe we wanted to do or something, honestly, that may make more sense in that instance, but we have to get to the sales element or promo. So slightly, but that, juggling these things is part of the deal. So I wouldn't even look at it as constrained, but you definitely have to format things based around it for sure. I mean, the sales is, outside of documenting the game, there's nothing more important than getting your sponsored elements in. Like there's, right, before I mentioned everything is subjective, 98% or whatever. Well, in that 2% falls getting in your sales elements, buddy. That'll get you working somewhere else. So, it's not an exact science and a lot of right and wrongs, but that would be a wrong.
How important was it for you back in February of this year? You were a lead producer for ESPN's first all-black staffed NBA production, that game called by Mark Jones, Richard Jefferson, and Lisa Salters. It was Spurs versus Hawks, and you were a lead producer for that game. How important was that for you?
Very. That's the best thing I've done in my career. That is the most memorable thing, the thing that meant the most, felt the most proud. I produced a lot. Yeah, I've been in the business since 01, 02. I've been a producer since 07, 08, studio as well as event. Nothing's touched that. I've done a million shows, a million games. I won't remember many of them. But I remember that one forever, right? It was surreal. It was surreal to be a part of it. It was definitely surreal to be tasked with producing it. Like I was the producer on it. So it meant a lot. I'm seeing people who had been in the business for 40 years actually crying, legit crying about the moment. People just having side conversations with me about how proud they were, how happy they were to be a part of it. Yeah, that's the most important thing I've done and probably will be. I don't know how you top that, right? We as producers don't get many chances to make history, right? If I produce a game or something memorable happened, like it could be, it could be somebody, some huge injury or some big shot in game 7. Well, I didn't do nothing. I just was sitting there, like to be tasked with trying to get this whole group together and plan for the show. For this game is, yeah, remember that forever. It was super important. I was happy to get the call for it. And yeah, that was fantastic.
You remember your emotions and your thoughts when you got the call?
I don't remember them as much then, but I do remember that day, like just being like, you know, let's knock this out the park. And again, you're thinking that all the time, but I was feeling that a little bit more. I don't want to say pressure. There was no pressure, just more just, you know, it's like I mentioned earlier, some of the juices and just the expectation, the anticipation. Like it was more inside of me before that than it is a usual game, right? Because again, I'm talking about, you know, people coming up to me. I'm seeing people crying and we're taking photos and there was a press run for, and there was just a lot going on. So, you know, the magnitude of the moment was definitely not lost on me. So I just remember being there and Adam Bryan, who was a good friend of mine, and he was my director. And just being like, you know, let's crush this. Let's do it. So, yeah, I just remember that day and, you know, leading up, just being like, whew, this is huge. Like, just, you don't really think that, right? I've done some playoff elimination games. It's like, okay. I didn't feel like it was nowhere near as big as that game was. And that was February, Hawks and Spurs, you know.
Is there any broadcast, you know, that you've watched, and it can be before you began your career, not that you wish you had done, but that you can imagine yourself doing and doing something differently, something like a Malice at the Palace?
I don't know much that could have been done differently as I'm just watching, thinking about how that unfolded. It's funny, I had a conversation about this recently, about the Malice in the Palace, and I was telling someone, I was speaking to a colleague who was an intern in New York, and he asked me specifically if I was doing the Malice at the Palace, what would have been the scenario for a producer. That's so funny. Twice in a week is crazy. Anyway, so first of all, I told him, I said, I'd be on the truck, so there's no harm for me at all, right? But what I was explaining to him is, for the most part, in that scene, everything is on tape. I'm in no rush to replay anything. You saw the cuts. It could have honestly just taken camera one, which is the game camera. Camera one is if you're just watching the game, the standard camera that you see for the most part, unless it's going close on people, just camera one. For the most part, they could have stayed on that. But obviously, they were cutting around. But you're in no hurry to get to replays of anything in that situation, because everything is happening live and you can't miss any of that live. You got to catch as much as you can. And then I think as a producer, I mean, it's fine to say it now, it's long over. It's just like, where you want to go, you got everything in tape. You got people getting knocked out left and right. You got people throwing stuff, fans, like, it's like replay heaven, right? Right? You hate being in a situation where you don't know where to go, because people in tape telling you, oh, I didn't get it. Oh, this camera didn't get it. My camera. But when you're looking and you're looking at every reaction you could want, and you're just looking at it all, you just want to document it the right way and, you know, replay the things that make sense. But in that situation, you're staying live for the entire melee for the most part. Like you couldn't have missed any of that. Like people at home be screaming, what are you doing? So as you cut to a replay during all that, that's exactly what people would have been screaming. Like, why are they leaving the court? So you just wait it out.
It's so interesting because, and I've heard even play-by-play announcers say this, but when the moments get the most intense, you tend to, the play-by-play announcers talk about simplifying things and going back to the basics. Have I talked about score? Have I talked about time? Have I talked about timeouts? Have I talked about fouls to give and things like that?
Reset.
Is it the same thing as a producer, just sort of going back to the basics?
Yeah, that's actually called a reset, which you just described, and you know you have a graphic for that. But right, that just because right, if something's going crazy like that, you got to look at it like this. A lot of people, especially in this day and age, they find out about it and they just turn the channel to it. So that's one of the reasons you want to reset, so people chiming in, they can see what's happening, but you want to, hey, it's still a game going on here too. Right, even if it's a good game and you just want people to know, hey, you know, 100 to 100, two timeouts, possession in office, college, whatever the case may be. But as a producer, you want to simplify, right? When something's going crazy, say less. There's a no rush to say words, right? You can mess up something. We don't have the information correct. We were given misinformation for the table, right? Like that, and that stuff happens, right? So until we know for sure, what's the rush? And there's no rush for me to throw a graphic on the screen or tell my announcers to fill the dead air or replay. Where am I rushing to? So you do want to keep it simple. And a lot of times, less is more in those situations. And then, right, get to it. But it's definitely, in most cases like that, it's not a time for a word salad. So you kind of reset the table for people, get on what's going on in the game. And then, you know, whatever the situation calls for, kind of get back to it. But you definitely want to reset everything, because for the next whatever you're going to be talking about, you know, whatever big moment is happening.
I want to get your thoughts on the circumstance that you look at as the ideal, the perfect moment, that which you aspire to reach, if you have any examples.
Sure. I mean, well, the NBA is my, that's my favorite sport. Before I got on the project, I've been trying to produce it for years. So the pinnacle of that would be producing the NBA Finals. For me, that would be the pinnacle. But, you know, as a producer, you know, in any big event of that magnitude, like if I was still doing college football, I'd say college football playoff would be fantastic, right? And with each of these games, obviously you have more cameras, you have more resources, you have, you know, the better crews, you have all these great things at your disposal. So I would say realistically, it would be, you know, NBA Finals, and I'm still young in this in this job with the NBA and just being an event producer. I'm still fairly young in it, I think. So we'll see if that comes to fruition. But I would have loved to have been producing Michael Jordan's shot in 98, that game versus Utah. I just think as a producer, what more? Like, one, you just had a great game. You have, you know, somebody that's looked at as the greatest. You thought that would be his last game. You get that shot. You had the perfect replay on it. You had reactions. It was the end of it. A championship was won. Like, every moment you could want as a producer happened there. It was like the perfect storm, right? The game, he had to bring them back. He had to steal them alone. Like, just the whole game was just a moment, right? You're already juiced before the game because you're thinking a championship could be won tonight, right? Either this team's going to win a championship and this team is fighting for their life. So you just know it's going to be a good game. And you got Mike on the court, like it's going to Karl Malone, it's the finals. But then for the game to play out like that, it's just got to be like just producer's like dream. Like, this was just amazing. So for me, you know, I would say any big game, I don't even want to box it in. It could be college football playoff. It could be WNBA finals, a clincher. I would want it to be a clincher for sure. Cause I've done some, like women's NCAA tournament games, again, WNBA semifinals. So, but we're talking about clinchers and, you know, season deciding games, you know, that's a different, kind of a different level.
Well, as Marv Albert might say, that will wrap it. I want to thank Paul Irvin for taking the time to speak with us. I think it was a great conversation, and I hope you all think so too. And I also want to thank Armand for joining me and all of you for listening. We'll be back with more stuff, including next week, a special interview with Mark Jones of the NBA on ESPN, and obviously college football, so many other properties. So tune in for that. I'll have that out later in the week. And of course, we're getting close to the start of football season, which means that Armand and I will be back to our usual schedule of regular shows talking about current and up-to-date issues that are going on in the industry. All right, we'll be back with more down the line.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.